My name is Ed Piskor.
I'm Jim Rugg.
And we're going to be covering Watchmen issue number 2. But first, what you got, Jim?
Patreon.com/Jim Rugg, where I show off a lot of art process, behind the scenes kind of stuff, Q&As, all the things you've come to love from my my process. And coming up, I'm going to compare and contrast the first and last Street Angel stories that I made for Image Comics, Deadliest Girl Alive, the recent Image Comics Street Angel book, because I realized I started with this story about a lost dog that befriends Street Angel. As I kept making stories, because Image requires several stories before they go to publication, I kept getting better, getting kind of like riding a bike, you know, getting back in shape with the character. And so the original story never ran. When I got the free comic book day, I completely overhauled it. I rewrote parts of it. I redrew the whole thing, different materials. I love comparison videos that we've been making. So I'm going to go through a comparison of these two versions. That's patreon.com/Jim Rugg.
Red Room issue 1 is going to be hitting the stands in May, and it could be pre-ordered at this moment. Thousands of people have pre-ordered the comic so far. Thank you very much for doing so. That stokes me out immensely. If you want this comic delivered to your doorstep, you could hit up the Fantagraphics website at my link tree below. If not, your store will be able to order it in at the end of February. If you want to read the issue ahead of time, patreon.com/Ed Piskor. You could hit up my archive for $3, read the first couple issues. I put new strips up every Tuesday, and these stories will show up there before they hit print, but they're certainly made for paper. With that out of the way, Jimmy, let's talk Watchmen issue number 2.
October 1986, that magical comics year. And, you know, I read this later. I read this in the trade paperback format. But I always like to imagine, like, what would it be like, especially for a book like Watchmen, paradigm shifting, and you go to the store, issue 2 comes out, you had read issue 1, pretty intriguing, you're on board. Issue 2 is a dark issue, man.
We talked about it in the first issue, like, you know, what is it? But we were forward projecting, like, we knew what the heck the comic was. When you read issue 1, it feels like a standard Columbo whodunit, you know, who killed comedian. That's what we're in for, right? We perpetrate that a little bit more here, but it's going to get some nuance.
One of the coolest things with Watchmen is how that cover image leads into your comic. And in the trade paperback, it's really clear, you know, cover into like panel 1. It's like, this is really panel 1 is your cover. Always loved that.
I do too.
I don't know that that's the first time it's been done, but man, it's done really well in Watchmen.
Yeah, it's great. And we have, we're intercutting. You can see, man, it's that syncopated rhythm where every panel is a different location oscillating between the funeral of Edward Blake and Sally Jupiter 1 and 2 at the old folks home.
Yeah, as we're going to see in this issue, there's some history between Sally's mother and the comedian, and Sally really wants no part of going to that funeral, so John sends her, teleports her to go visit her mom in California.
Yeah, and once again, we're gonna read this like we don't know what's coming, man. Try to have a clear mind and just sort of take it for what it is. This is interesting. Check out the title treatment in the issue compared to the trade paperback. Much nicer approach here.
Do you think this is a Dave Gibbons choice? Because it is the same, you know, he's using a font in both versions. Dave Gibbons, the letterer. Do you think he's picking this font? Because it gives it a certain distinguished quality in my mind. It feels like this is a more mature, sophisticated comic book. And I think, you know, things like the little details of let's set the credits and the title in this font rather than hand lettering it.
Yeah, you know, probably. I'm sure he's not doing paste ups and mechanicals on like the back matter where it's like the fake books and stuff.
Right.
You get the job guys to do that shit. But this seems pretty important.
It's very alien compared to other comics. Think of what DC's publishing in 1986, like a very different visual approach.
Yeah, for sure. John Higgins on the color duties, man, we got to give him mad props with separating place through color with
and creating mood.
Absolutely.
That cemetery scene is dreary.
Yeah, and it's clearly like a sunny day at the old folks home. Dave Gibbons selling body types again. We mentioned his Night Owl kind of doughy body type, man. Old school Sally Jupiter, man.
Very believable bodies on these characters.
Right.
Still idealized a little bit. You know, if you start counting like head heights, there's that fashion model head heights, but the weight feels like real weight.
And we're getting still some of that weird like futurism or like alternate timeline stuff with these funeral guys with the little dills on their head, unless that's a religion I just don't know about.
Yeah, I don't know what that's a reference to because they're folding up, I think, a flag. I feel like
so it's like soldiers.
The military component of comedians' history represented there. So I don't know what those hats are.
There are those like little bits, man. Just like Sally Jupiter right there, man, smoking her little crack pipe. You'll see people doing that shit.
What do you think that denotes? Is that a drug as opposed to a cigarette, or just a cigarette?
Because she's doing it, I think it's a cigarette. But you do see the hoods doing it, and then it's like, man, like crack is on the streets. But if she's doing it, you know, she's kind of square.
Her mother makes a big production of it, like opening windows and coughing, doors and stuff. And so Sally finally puts it out, guilted into it. And we get into this discussion about the way life changes as you get older. And it reminded me of just nostalgia. It feels like there's a lot of these moments that Moore is, I don't know, looking at comics, but filtering the message through like a more domestic conversation.
Nostalgia is a big deal. I mean, like the perfume isn't just there for no reason. There is one piece right here where, is it Silk Spectre?
I think it is Silk Spectre 1 and 2, but I'm not sure of her name.
Yeah. Anyhow, Silk Spectre 1, when she's sitting there and is like, he sent me an item of memorabilia. Americans all talk that way. I have an item of memorabilia. That sounds too proper.
Yeah, if we focused as much on the writing as we do the art, I'm sure you could find those stylistic ticks all over the place.
I do like that we're talking Tijuana Bible. So, like, let's go before the damn superhero comic, man, and show off a little Tijuana Bible. I would love to read the whole 8-page. Like, let that be the back matter. And my introduction to the Tijuana Bible was in that Comics by Les Daniels book. And you get to see a couple examples right here, man. Like, look at this, man. Bad guy, Tijuana Bibles with Pretty Boy Floyd and John Dillinger having sex. Hey, what's the matter, girly? And like pinching her butt and stuff, and like popping his head into a dorm room, wielding guns with a naked student.
So it's school for girls. Wow, yeah, it's very quaint from today's standards, but funny to see that.
All right, man, let's go back in time, and this is the issue when I read it as a little kid. I was like, okay, his name's the comedian, but he's a really bad guy. So it's just like when there's, you know, a big fat gangster bad guy and he's called Mr. Tiny or something.
Love the transition. We see her reflecting on this photograph of the Minutemen, the team that she was part of in the Golden Age, and a little bit of a sun glare off of the glass cuts perfectly to the camera flash. And now we're back.
Yeah, the Alan Moore transition is he writes about it.
Yeah.
And we see it on display really well here.
It's a good transition from photograph to back in that moment. And you see post-photograph, everybody's all gathered. It's a good reason to have the group all in one room together.
There's this great, there's subtle stuff that's kind of interesting too about the Silk Spectre character. So like the last name is, when you hear it, you know, in those motion comics, it's Uspechik, but it's spelled like Jew, and the character is one kind of like the old comic creators who kind of hid their ethnicity.
Right.
So it's like Jew is in her name, and she's Jewish, and she's trying to hide the fact that she's Jewish. So that's just like one of those like other like little bits of detail. But she's got to get dressed, man, to go to the bar and hang out with the guys. This is where young Eddie Brock, man, comes back and It is a rape sequence. Masked vigilante comes in.
Rape and violent abuse.
I mean, that's what rape is, you know.
Like, yeah, I guess
it has nothing to do with sex. It's like destroying somebody's soul.
It's still pretty graphic all around.
Yeah, and then he still manages, like, even when he gets his ass beat, he still manages to like get under the skin of that masked vigilante dude.
Comedian is a horrible person, but a great character, like, because of that moment, because of, like, let me throw some psychology your way, hooded justice guy that thinks you're, self-righteous hooded justice, let me tell you about you.
Right. So we're back to the old folks' home, and we get to see another little glimpse of this. Dave Gibbons doing R. Crumb, like, down to the lettering. Like, that's R. Crumb lettering. It's so strong, man.
Yeah, lettering on lettering is some of... I just love it. That's such a cool panel.
Yeah, because, I mean, what goes into that, Jimmy, right? Like, has to use different tools to, like, get that line.
Yeah, very awesome. Even being reproduced in black and white on the page is kind of a cool way to see a comic within a comic.
Yes. All right. Going back to the funeral, and we're going to see an Eddie Brock sequence from Ozymandias' point of view.
I want to point out one last piece in terms of, like, art within art. So, you know, her mother's has all this paraphernalia from the Minuteman days, and we see little glimpses of it. There is so much of that, like, you know, newspaper headlines that you can read, maps, all of this, like, meta art information within these panels. I'm in awe of it because, like, it's deceptively simple at times, his art, until you start looking at it.
Right.
It's simple compared to, say, the excessive cross-hatching that we would see in the early 90s. But in terms of the content and how much is packed into these panels, it's remarkable.
Every line that's put down is there for a purpose. And when you see these kinds of things, it is a comic book. It's a caption. It's,
yes,
it's a storytelling device, but it's just not telling you meanwhile.
Right. Yeah, well said. That's that thing where Alan Moore's scripts are incredibly thoughtful.
Yeah.
But also, you need the collaborator that's able to actually apply that and put it, translate that into something visual. It's hard to have that amount of depth.
Yeah. If the channel goes on long enough, we'll have to start doing Supreme Comics. So, comedian, little older, so the character design changes. We saw that in not watching the Watchmen book. Like, he has designs for every stage of growth of the character, from the young scrappy to the day he dies. And he's basically poo-pooing and shitting on the idea of a Justice League being formed a second time or whatever.
Look at the greatness of this. So we have I forget what it's called whenever a panel stretches across several panels, but it's one image. And we have this main guy who brought them together talking. His arrow that comes off panel points to him.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal, the design. And of course, prominently comedian just shitting on his point there in the foreground. The big, big character. A lot of weight and a lot of darkness that he adds to this scene of otherwise very colorful, pastel color characters. And comedian's just black and gray.
We've seen Rorschach before, and he's got a very specific kind of dialogue balloon. He's not far gone here yet. He gets the regular dialogue bubble.
Good,
worth noting. And here you go with the proportions. Like, I swear, like, Dave Gibbons didn't always draw his figures with these kind of proportions. His Green Lanterns aren't built this way, and his, like, Martha Washingtons aren't built this way, with these, like, super elongated forms.
It makes me wonder how much he plays with these forms. Something I hadn't noticed in the past, but if he changes the proportions throughout the story. You know, here they're heroic, right? This is a superhero team. Rorschach hasn't gone through his darkest hours.
Right.
I wonder if that changes as the story progresses and as we see these characters break down and become more human and less romanticized ideal superhero.
Yeah, we'll keep note of that, man. Also, the transition right here, man. Somebody has to do it. Somebody has to save the world, and then we rematerialize to modern day Adrian Veidt.
Yeah. Not giving too much away, but foreshadowing.
On your rereads.
Right.
That's where you go, oh, damn, that's dope.
Yes, it is.
Oh, that's dope. One of the few times where we deviate from the 9-panel grid.
Yeah, I think they do less of that as the story progresses, but a few times here in the first couple issues.
Yeah. And we're going back to Nam.
1-point perspective on that top splash page.
Yeah, it makes it work good, man. Having it on that angle really, really helps a bunch. You get to see, oh, dude, that's Moloch right there, probably.
Yes.
With the roses. Not too many people there. Oh, yeah, that is Moloch. You could see him right there. And this issue, we're getting some anecdotes of a comedian from a bunch of different people. It's Dr. Manhattan's turn.
Yeah.
Beach party Vietnam, surfing with the Viet Cong, surfing hot dogs with napalm.
I love the white around Manhattan in the rain.
Right. Yeah, like he's got like his own layer of atmosphere around him or something, man.
It's very shorthand for comics, like how do you separate him? Mm-hmm. But also it's very dramatic.
It's cool. Yeah, it selling the nuclear thing in comics, there's a lot of ways that it's done, and they're all pretty cool. So this ain't our world, man.
The Americans. Yeah, this is great. I like this a lot on the reread. The Vietnam, you know, redoing Vietnam with Dr. Manhattan in your pocket.
Yeah.
All the implications of that. You know, Nixon becoming president forever. And then speculation about what does America look like if we lost this war?
It might have driven us a little crazy, you know, as a country.
Pretty good.
Yes, very good.
Parallels with like the last chopper out of Saigon is now like the first chopper into Saigon.
Yeah. So you see the celebrating, almost like straight from the, straight from those propaganda Time Life photos and junk. And enter stage left.
Go back one more. I can't help pointing out details, but here's the Richard Nixon sign, "Hi, Dick," and it's backwards because we're behind the crowd, so you can still see some of the lettering through the sign, but it's backwards because we're behind it.
It's totally thinking, man.
It is.
It's totally
That's
thinking.
That's some next-level stuff for a detail that tiny. And this is where you thought the rape scene was a dark moment in comedians' history. One of many.
And by the way, like, you know this scene is why that one Preacher comic with Stephen Platt even exists, man, where it's like Vietnam prophet is killing pregnant ladies and stuff. You know, it just comes directly from here.
This is a nuts sequence. So comedian impregnates a woman in Vietnam, hates Vietnam, wants to get out of there. End of the war, he's happy to leave. And the mother of his child shows up.
Yes.
And
he knows as soon as he sees her, like, oh, God. And he's like, listen, America number one, Vietnam number 10. I'm out. I'm leaving. I'm going to forget about you. She's like, nah, you're not going to forget about me. We discover how he got that scar on his jib.
Pretty good scar origin.
And he pulls out the gat and just stands there stoically.
Wow.
Does her in. And Dr. Manhattan's like, don't do it. But then you get the whole piece, like, once again, like, comedian able to sort of get under your skin, identify you, hit you with a little psychological warfare. It's like, dude, you could have turned the bullets into snowflakes. You could have turned that bottle into confetti.
Yeah, it's a dark moment for Manhattan. It really tells you a lot about that character. It's rough. Like again, top of the show, I mentioned, imagine reading this off the stands. You're 1.5 issues into this series. You have no idea what Watchmen is. Holy shit, man.
Yeah. Yeah, you're this ain't... This ain't rainy day fun for boys and girls.
When I think about this, yeah, when I think about this story, rereading it has forced me to read this stuff because I don't remember this stuff. You know, like, right. I remember the cool shots. I remember this kind of stuff, like all the cool drawings and everything. You go back through and see these details, and it really colors like the dark age of comics and just how dark and gritty this stuff was.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the introduction to that in a lot of ways, man. You had your alcoholic Iron Man before, but, you know, let's put that under the microscope one day and compare that. By the way, talking about details, looking in the little Night Owl ship, you see the fire extinguisher that's going to come into play during their little superhero lovemaking session.
I love the Night Owl ship so much.
Yeah. I saw when the Zack Snyder flick was made, there's a video of Dave Gibbons visiting the Night Owl ship and just like being blown, like, this is, I drew this.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
I can remember Mike Mignola talking about like on the set of Hellboy and sitting there with Ron Perlman in full makeup and it's just like
just staring
surreal.
At him. Yeah, like I can't imagine. Cosplayers, start dressing up as Red Room characters.
And another iteration of comedian right now with the full-on mask.
Yeah, just like the gimp mask. It's like a bondage slave mask. Like, there's some kink shit there.
Yes. Darker and darker. And they talk about it. I can't remember if it's within this comic or in the text piece afterwards, but about him moving on. It might be here. Moving on to, like, the leather and stuff to protect himself as... You know, he's just exposed to more and more violence as he descends deeper and deeper into his hellish life.
Yeah, and you see the example right there, like, catches the can to the head, man. Like, might get a little cut if you were wearing a domino mask. And here we see his kind of, like, hard-ass approach. A dude just, like, busting out some graffiti. And then he does them in with a couple pumpkin balls.
All right, man. one more detail here.
Yes.
Note the outlines of the word balloons. Whenever we saw the first Minuteman meetings, they were the nice smooth ovals.
Wow.
Already we're getting into like the edges of the word balloons. Look how smooth.
Wow.
Ovals, templates, French curves. And now it's kind of like getting just grosser and harder.
I never noticed that. That's incredible.
It's a different world, man. It's funny, too, because that's what they talk about, you know, and Night Owl is pointing out that difference. And comedians like, he's at home.
Yeah. And you totally get that sense. He's loving it. Back to the funeral sequence. Notice who was not at the funeral, man. I didn't see any Rorschach there. But then as Moloch leaves after putting down those roses, we see that guy from issue one holding that end is nigh sign.
Do you remember whenever you realized that was Rorschach?
I'm telling you, like when I first read that thing and I first saw him, I knew that character was important.
Yeah.
And then when you see him in the second issue, it's like, okay, we're just going to see this guy forever. Like, what is that?
Yeah, I made no connection to it until the reveal.
Like, sure.
It was just something it didn't add up to me.
Yeah, me too.
Which
me
is
too.
Part of what makes this so fun to reread. I mean, I had reread it before this rereading. I knew it going into this reread, but it is awesome. Like, I was looking for Moloch in the funeral scene, for example.
Right. The guy who played Moloch in the flick, it was Max Headroom, right?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I think it was. And if it wasn't, then they, in a wizard thing, they cast the Max Headroom guy as Moloch. And that's all I see when I see Moloch now. Like, it totally works. The set design is so perfect for everybody's crib, man. So Moloch's place, he looks, it's an old school bachelor. So has those rounded, like, Frigidaire, like those scary refrigerators that require us to, like, not have the door on anymore.
Right. Yes.
Like the ones that clasp shut.
This is very dynamic. Rorschach comes out at the bottom
like a superhero shot.
Really strong, yeah. You note the contrast. It's so vertical and horizontal leading up to that. Contrast is everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like we're getting an example of a superhero doing what a superhero does, so you give that crazy angle.
Yeah, really strong.
They have milk bottles still in that version in 1986. Amazing colors just coming off the character, like the sort of side lighting. But this is where we're going to be getting into the flickering light scenario, man. And that was sort of inspired by Harvey Kurtzman comics. I could show off some cool examples of that when we look at more Mads.
Look at Higgins' lighting.
That's what I'm saying. Like this even. Like, it's so cool, man.
I love this. It's a silhouette, essentially, because of the backlight from the refrigerator light. But it's still, like, purples and blues and stuff.
Yeah, see, this is the shit right here, man. Where you got, like, the little, like, you know, motel light or whatever outside, the light from the bar, and it's just flickering on and off, on and off, on and off.
Parallel to the cross-cutting and the opening pages of this issue.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and really messing with the reader. This level of, like, OCD, in a way, it matches all of us.
Right.
You know, it really caters to almost the psychological profile of comic book, especially superhero comic readers of this time period who are cataloging first appearance, last time this character appeared, when some change happened, you know, in footnotes.
Right.
This is really taking that to an extreme level, probably the highest level you see in a superhero comic.
I'm a sucker for the first-person point of view in comics. Moore did it once before with the Boogeyman character from Swamp Thing, the one serial killer dude. Great example of it here. And this is where we learn that it's not just a simple who done. There's a reason behind the comedian's disposal. And he saw some stuff. What did he see? We have no idea. We know that writers, scientists, and artists have something to do with it. And it's big. And it's scary. And we've built this character up as a vicious piece of shit with no feelings. And he's a scumbag and he's awful. And he was witness to something that's crosses his lines.
You know, this is great. Because I had raised the point in issue one of, like, why kill this guy and start this whole mass killer? Did he know? Well, he knew. Okay, good. Explained it in issue two. My question now going forward as we get into this reread is, what did he see that was this bad? Because, like, he shoots the mother of his unborn child and seems okay with it. So, like, what do you see out the window of your plane that is this bad? And I'm curious to see if that pays off. Right. It probably will. You know, I'm not suggesting it won't after I've already been quieted from that first issue concern. But it does set up this stuff. There's a lot of that that Moore does really well, where it's set up, right? It's anticipation. It's like, okay, now I have a question about this that I need answered.
Yeah.
Makes, you know, keep reading. Find those answers.
And then we get into the Judge Dredd aspect of Rorschach. And he's just, like, looking for any reason to fuck this dude up. Finds an illegal prescription. One of the famous lines, man, you know, I have cancer. What kind of cancer? You know, the kind that you get better from? I don't have that kind of cancer. And then he lets him be.
Jeez.
But writes up the company. He's a real narc.
Yeah, he's no fun at all. There you get your high-tech taxi cabs juxtaposed with early 80s 42nd Street.
Absolutely, man. Enola Gay and the Little Boys.
Yeah. Man, 42nd Street, what a weird mythological place at this point in the world.
Yeah, read Josh Allen Friedman's book, Times Square, man, and get some crazy stories. Stranger than fiction type shits.
Or go watch Taxi Driver, you yeah. know, to get some visual reference of what that looks like.
And here's that, like, duality of, like, the Rorschach personality. So, like, we know that he was that guy holding the sign, right? So he was already at the funeral, but now Rorschach has to go. That was Walter Kovacs. Now he's got to go to the funeral.
This panel with the reflection is one of the coolest. I look at that and I just think, like, that's the best question drawing ever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what an amazing panel with him, with the reflection in the middle of the panel. And it's so small, but beautiful.
Gibbons doesn't fake anything, man. Like the perspective all lines up. You know, there's no floating characters. Like, he's a real illustrator, man. Follows all the rules. What do you reference it, Jim?
The repetition of things just never, ever stops. So we have comedian right before he's chucked out the window, and you see where the hand placement is, and you see him a week before in Moloch's apartment, and the hand placement's the same kind of deal. It's this mirror imaging just over and over.
Yeah.
Funhouse mirrors almost.
and you always pick new ones up, right? Like, I never noticed that one either.
Tells the clown joke in Rorschach's
Another
journal.
Classic thing. That's what I'm saying. This shit is like Shakespeare in a way. Like, you could almost, like, recite this stuff. I am Pagliacci.
They're aiming really high. You can see why Watchmen is held in the regard it's held. I'm not the biggest Watchmen fan. You know, like, I don't sit around going, this is the best comic ever.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of superhero comics, it is absolutely amazing, and it will reward those reread, scrutinize, look at all the details. And it's this kind of stuff where it's like Dave Gibbons is really taking superhero art to another level with these kind of details of word balloons evolving as these characters, you know, as the world falls. And I think it's the same thing with Alan Moore. You know, they're just aiming at this spot that's so much higher than what people would aim at with superhero comics up to this point. It's remarkable. It's really visionary.
Absolutely. And like, the words and picture play with all of this stuff, man. Good joke. Everybody laughs. Roll on snare. Curtains.
Like, yeah.
It's perfect.
It really is.
And then this is something that we discovered after we recorded that.
Yeah, man, I got so mad. Someone pointed out, why did you censor the Bob Dylan quote? And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? Didn't even realize that it wasn't in, you know, I was following along in the trade paperback, didn't realize it wasn't there. Here we have Elvis Costello. Got to be a rights issue.
Yeah, the companies are shook, man. They're big wusses, and they just didn't get the clearances fast enough or something.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right.
Everybody's just got a job. Like, the original people who created the company ain't working there. They just want to preserve their job, and they're going to play it safe.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've done corporate comics. They go through a lawyer review process where, like, anything of question, a logo on shoes in the background, got to remove them.
Yeah.
And it's like, nobody's suing over that, but also those lawyers got to justify their hourly rate, I guess.
That's it.
They're going to find something.
Yeah.
And then quite we have an issue.
Yeah, we have our little piece of Under the Hood where it kind of just builds on top of some of that Minuteman stuff that we saw earlier.
Yeah, I like this piece.
Explains, you know, somehow some of the characters, like, where they're at these days.
It's the whole history of the Minutemen.
Yeah.
From Hollis, you know, figuring out his character, working at the gym extra before and after his policeman shift, the group coming together and then being separated as, like, you know, Comedian gets kicked out after his assault. Silk Spectre quits, which is, like, he cites it as, like, the biggest thing. The most serious blow when Sally quit crime fighting to marry her agent. It's hard for me to believe that's the most serious blow of what we've seen from these flashbacks. I think there's some darker stuff. Various characters, before he says that's the most serious blow, he explains three characters that are killed. I think those are probably more serious blows, superheroes being shot and killed in the streets.
He has a crush on the girl and he doesn't get to see her anymore.
Nevertheless, I like this excerpt because it is like a whole history of the team.
Young Moloch, get to see his young form when he was a strapping arch-villain. Get to see yet another kind of iteration of the Vietnam era comedian, which just looks terrifying. You know, yeah. He's enjoying it too much out there.
You know
there.
What? World War II, 42.
Oh, yeah.
World War II. This is the most, you know, jovial comedian you're going to get. It's still kind of pure of heart. He's young. I think he's like 16 whenever he takes up the comedian. If you do all of his, you know, like birth date
right.
stuff. I think he's like 16 when he starts crime fighting as the comedian.
Right.
So pretty young in World War II, he's a hero. And that's a real idealized war. So you see him in kind of a, I don't know, a happier place.
Heck of a chapter.
By the way, Under the Hood excerpts, Alan Moore culpable whenever DC makes like a dozen spinoff series because he's given history to all these characters. He's given the blueprint. This is the Bible of how you can keep making Watchmen comics. Anyway. That's a good issue.
Yeah.
There's a lot in that issue.
Yeah, super fun. Once again, we'll do one per month, you know, until we do the entire series. Anyhow, kayfabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell. We'll notify you when new vids are available. What you got, Jim?
Subscribe to my Patreon, patreon.com/JimRugg, to find lots more of my art process, behind the scenes, etc., etc.
Red Room issue 1 is coming out May 2021. It's going to be a monthly comic. Each of those issues self-contained. Reserve your copy today at the Fantagraphics website. I have a link tree in the description below. It can take you there. Thousands of people have already found that link and reserved their copies. Patreon.com/EdPiskor. You could read the Red Room comics before your purchase of the physical object at patreon.com/Ed. Did I say that? I don't know. I'm getting spun around. Jim! Tell them some other stuff.
I don't think we made a big enough deal about the rain on the cover. Cartoonist and rain go hand in hand. Really good rain and a repeat of your blood motif from the smiley face as a tear coming down that statue on the side.
And by the way, just the academic drawing
yes.
of like a perfectly in profile face with not one thing out of proportion. Like I imagine that Dave Givens like had the pencil and was like measuring the proportions of like some statue to get that thing so perfect. It's ridiculous.
It is. It really is. You guys at home can subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe newsletter below this video to keep up with all of these kind of observations that we make throughout the year. You can also find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts and merchandise at the links below this video.
Jimmy, give them one more set of marching orders. We're going to be on our way.
Read more comics.
M-O-O-R-E.